Well, welcome to a bonus conversation with author Matt Paulson. As part of Matt's latest book, he's created a list of practical ideas for you to take and run with to start your own business. So right now, we're going to get the chance to hear directly from Matt about those ideas and some practical steps that you can take to launch one, or like Matt, more than one. So, you know, why have one business when you could have four that are making you money, right?
That's how it goes. It's the diversification is nice, and you can have several different income streams. So as they kind of ebb and flow, you know, your income stream will level out, and that's a good way to do internet business.
Yeah. And the truth is businesses have life cycles.
Yeah. I mean, the first businesses I started in like 2006 no longer exist, but, you know, I've started other things since then that have kind of taken that place because, you know, what I did then wouldn't work now. And, you know, what I'm doing now might not work 5 years from now.
Yeah. Which is kind of scary.
It is. I mean, if you have a job, you're not going to be doing that job for the rest of your life. I mean, you don't assume that, so you shouldn't assume that the business that you start with is going to be the business that you finish with.
Right, right. It's true. And that's why you see people like, and it's easy, we'll take some bigger names like Biz Stone or things, people that start Twitter, mm-hmm. they go start something else.
Yeah, right? I mean, you think like Biz and Ev, they, you know, started with Blogger and then they did Twitter and I think they're doing Medium and they've got some other stuff going on, and that was, you know, a 10-year period.
Yeah. Yeah, because one of those things might die. Yep. Like Blogger.
It's still out there.
I know. They sold it, I think. So good for them.
Yep.
So these are pulled actually from a section of the book, but the reason this is so great is you get to actually hear from Matt and hear some more in-depth ideas about what are the options for these ideas? Not just what are the ideas, but what are some really practical implementations of them. So as he states here in the book, if you haven't settled on an idea for your internet business yet and need some ideas, there's 40 that we've included, and we're going to go through maybe 15 or 20 of them now just in conversation. So we're going to kind of pull from that section of the book, and you can look up the corresponding numbers, but we'll just kind of have a conversational tone about it. We won't go through number by number. But one of the first things we're going to talk about is creating a jobs website for a niche industry. How do you say niche? I want to know that.
I call it niche. I don't say niche.
Yeah, I just can't. It sounds like too much like quiche. Not there's anything wrong with quiche. But create a jobs website for a niche industry and charge for job postings. Mm-hmm. So my job is to be the devil's advocate. Like, doesn't that exist already for a lot of things?
There are a lot of job posting sites. You know, there's Indeed, there's Monster, there's, you know, all sorts of job websites.
Have you ever been on Monster?
Yeah.
Isn't it just ridiculous?
I don't know. I don't see how it ends up being terribly useful.
I don't know how it works is what you want to say. Like, I don't get, like, the only person that seems like a wins in a Monster is Monster.
It does. I think there is an opportunity there though, because for very niche categories, there are people, I have one client who does probably about 10 grand a month on just a niche job website. They've picked out just a very small category. I think it's like people that work in sewers. It's called like Stormwater.
No way.
And they have a website called Stormwater Jobs. And, you know, they're the place to go for that type of job posting. Wow. And people looking for jobs know that. And, you know, the municipalities that post those jobs, they know that too. And
wow.
They've been able to kind of be that marketplace for that specific industry.
Wow.
And then there's another guy, his name is Rob Wall, and he launched a site called Apprentice Lineman Jobs. And that was one of his first businesses, and that's still floating out there. And one of the nice things about these businesses is that they don't require a lot of work. It's, you know, once you get them up and going and you have them promoted to people that are looking for those jobs,
yeah.
you know, to approve a job posting is, you know, a couple minutes worth of work and you make a couple $100.
Yeah. And, you know, for the person that wants to do the hiring, you're helping them.
Yes.
I mean, let's remember, that's the backbone of all these businesses, is that people are transferring their money to you because it's always a win-win.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, their options are post on a job website and pay a couple $100 and hope they find somebody good, or they can pay a recruiter $30,000 to find a candidate
yeah.
for them. And
yeah.
obviously if you're charging, one 150th of the cost, that's a pretty win-win for them.
Absolutely. So again, if there are things that exist already on a national level. And I even think locally, we've got a place that does, you know, ratings here locally.
Yep.
And you think, well, don't we have apps for that that already exist? Whether it's, you know, you can search for someone on Google, mm-hmm. Yelp, things like that. Absolutely.
Yep.
But is there a Yelp for chiropractors? You know, I mean, but here there is, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. I mean, there are there's going to be broad based things for anything that you want to do. But you know, something like Indeed or Monster, they're not, you know, focusing on whatever that niche category is. And if you can find, you know, a small area of the market and hyper serve that part of the market, you know, you can provide something specifically tailored to them and provide that set of people a lot more value than they might get from a generic business.
Hyper serve. I love that. Here's another one near and dear to my heart. Write an ebook on a subject you're knowledgeable about and publish it on Amazon or iBooks.
Yep.
Why is that? I mean, a lot of people think I'm not an author, right? Or I don't want to write 300 words. So dispel some of the myths around publishing, especially within the electronic category now.
Sure. I mean, I wasn't an author until I had written this book. I thought that, you know, 50,000 words, how am I ever going to possibly write that? Then I thought, you know, I've written 1,000-word blog posts before. I could probably just do that 50 times and then put that all together and, you know, have it edited and I would have a book. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's not an insurmountable task to write a book. I think everybody has a book inside of them. I found that I did throughout the process of writing this book. And obviously, you know, what it takes to publish a book these days is just so easy, and the Amazon and, you know, Apple will do a lot of that marketing for you just by being under Marketplace and, you know, just doing some basic optimization with your book title. It's, you know, you don't need a publisher anymore. You don't need to spend a ton of money to get a book out there. It's, you know, the publishing process has gotten so much simpler and easier in the information age.
Yeah, and the walls have come down. You don't have to ask, can I do that, or please pick me anymore. You just say, how do I do that? And then, you know, it's on YouTube or it's on their site because they want you. Because part of it is, and let's just, you know, be practical, they get 30% of what you sell.
Yep, and they want to sell your book.
They would be happy to take 30% and, you know, just host it. So, absolutely. If you're a web designer, you could create themes. And I would also say, really, any kind of designer, right? You could create themes or templates and sell those. One place you mentioned is Theme Forest.
Yep.
Again, it's sort of hyper-serving people who want to sell themes. And that's a great website. I love it's not healthy to go on there because you're like suddenly hate your theme. Right?
Yep, there's always a better one that you find.
Right. So talk to me about, I guess, what's the alternative? What are designers doing now versus this opportunity?
Sure. So there are a lot of designers that will, you know, be freelancers and find individual clients to build web designs for. And, you know, you might make $50-$75 an hour. You might make $1,000 for a theme, which, you know, the money's not bad, but, you know, you could make a theme once and sell it once, or you could make a theme once and sell it 100 times. So, I mean, if you can sell a theme 100 times at $50 pop, that's $5,000.
Right, right. And, you know, then you could tweak it. And, you know, I mean, you could offer, you know, specific support to those people who buy your theme. You know what I mean? And that's amazing that you can make money from people who buy the theme and then customizing the theme. I mean, it's just a different mindset, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it's the mindset of working hourly versus, you know, building products that are valuable to people and selling them. And I think this applies not just to, you know, designs, but it also applies to like WordPress plugins and anything that, you know, somebody could use on their website or in their business more than once.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you're an attorney, you don't write the same legal documents over and over again. You keep reusing the templates for different clients. And it's the question of, you know, just how many clients do you want to consume the product that you produce? I'd rather have, you know, 100 people subscribe to, you know, my newsletter and get that on a daily basis versus, you know, having one person pay really well and, you know, get that newsletter for them specifically.
Right, right. Which is essentially the difference between having a conversation over a cup of coffee and sending out an email.
Yep.
Or writing a blog post. And again, I love having, you know, we're having a conversation right now. It's different and there's value to it, but one scales and pays much better than the other.
Yes.
You know. By the way, a lot of cups of coffee, those kind of conversations can lead to good ideas.
Absolutely.
You're very generous in that regard with your ideas. So let's hear some more of them. How about this one? Offering coaching services in any specialized skill that you might have. Examples are health and nutrition. Some others I have on mine are like team building, you know, how to have a better office dynamic. I mean, I'm thinking of Patrick Lencioni's book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. I've gone in and taught that to a very small, like 15 people work there. But if you can go into a group and say, or business and say, hey, I can make you this percent better, right? That's an example of coaching.
Yep.
So why is this doable for more people than I think are actually doing it?
Sure. I think people underestimate how smart they are. And what they know that other people don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have read two or three books on a subject, you're more of an expert than probably 99% of the population.
Absolutely.
And people don't recognize that. I mean, you probably have a hobby or an interest or know about something that other people would want to know about. Andy here is an expert on books, and I'm having him help, you know, with the process of writing my book. And he might not think that he's a great expert about books, but he knows a lot more than I did.
I read three books about it.
Yeah. And I found value in having him help me with that.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, whether, you know, you're a nutrition expert or you know something about software development or...
And, you know, there's a lady that she makes her living... Actually, I'm thinking of two, actually. Mm-hmm. One of them, she makes her living helping people move, like emotionally, like deal with the emotions of a move. She wrote a book called Help Mommy, I Don't Want to Move. And she wrote another book about, you know, how to move with the family or something, you know, from the kid. So her job, it's ministry slash job, is that she helps families transition through a move. I'm thinking, how specific? And it's like Christians who move. Like, it's really hyper specific.
Yep.
But she's been doing it a long time. She's like three or four books, and you can like hire her. And there's another lady that you hire her for a few $100s, and you get to talk to her for a few hours about how to help get your kids asleep. You know, everybody says, do this. But she really customizes a plan for your kids and their personalities and your personality as a parent. And I'm thinking, this woman makes a living helping other parents get their kids to sleep.
Wow. That's amazing what people can do with a very specialized piece of small, you know, knowledge that you don't think is consequential, but, you know, other people find incredibly valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great one. So coaching services and a specialized skill that you probably don't think is very special, but it very well may be. How about this? This is getting a little more technical, but creating an online course on a subject that you have specialized skill about. I mean, this is sort of related to the last one, but what's the differentiator of creating an online course, and then what tools would you break that down so it's not so mysterious?
Yeah, I think with an online course, you know, instead of having the one-to-one relationship with a coaching client, it's the one-to-many relationship. So you can, you know, produce the piece of content once and then have somebody pay, say, $39, $79, whatever for it, and you can keep selling that piece over and over again. And I don't think that, I mean, it's easy to think that an online course is some mystifying object that you have to be a university professor to create. It's really not. I mean, it's, you know, what's the most important pieces of knowledge about that subject that you want to create a course about? And then how do you communicate that in a clear way, whether or not through that's text or video or, you know, whatever it happens to be.
Audio.
Yeah.
Audio. Very well done. We didn't even practice that.
No.
That's so good. Yeah, and those are all different elements. You know, I have some digital courses, and it's interesting that there's some people that love to download the PDF.
Yep.
Some people want the audio, and some people want the video. So I give them everything, right?
I mean, yeah, it's definitely an issue of learning style. Some people like to watch video. Some people like to listen. Other people like to read, and it's whatever, you know, happens to float that person's boat. So if you can address all those learning styles with your course, you know, that...
Everybody's happy. And it's hard to make everybody happy, you know, but you make it once.
Mm-hmm.
So I like this one, and I want to add a wrinkle to it, which is, and I really do like this idea, and I think people might be surprised, Matt, that it's even possible today. Like, they think, oh, people can't, you can't really do that.
Yep.
But buy underpriced items at garage sales and sell them on eBay.
Totally. I think there's big opportunity.
That's not, honestly, that sounds like a 1995 idea or something like that.
No, but it still works.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
Because there are people that don't want to take the time to figure out what the stuff they have is actually worth, and they don't want to take the time to market on eBay, and they don't want to take the time to ship it. And they just want, you know, for some people, a garage sale is about making money, and for other people, it's just about getting crap out of your house.
Yep.
And if you can go to the right garage sale at the right time, and there are people that want to get rid of stuff, you can say, you know, everybody negotiates at a garage sale. So if you know what something is worth ahead of time and you find that thing for a lot less than that and you resell it on eBay, you can make a decent amount of money.
Yeah. And I have a friend that, I'm trying to remember how he does this. I think he buys things on eBay and he sells them on Amazon because Amazon has a used marketplace.
Yep.
And he's gone as far as he actually has Amazon do all the shipping. So he sends his items to Amazon. Hmm. So when you buy them, I mean, it's amazing. He basically buys items from one online retailer and then sends them to another, and then he just makes. But he understands, and this is the key part, he understands when he gets the most buyers, he understands what people want to buy. Mm-hmm. You know, he's doing his own market research.
Yep.
And that's the part where are you willing to put in the work?
Yeah.
To know what to buy and what your margins are and so on and so forth.
Yeah, this is definitely a research and time intensive business. So if you have, you know, you're a stay-at-home mom and, you know, you have the kids with you all day, you can certainly haul them off to a garage sale and start looking and do some reading when they're napping. So that's a, you know.
Yeah, it might be a, I mean, you know, the other thing is this guy's, he's a photographer. Mm. And so he does cameras. So if you're, find something you're passionate about. If you don't care about photography, it's probably not a good idea to be selling cameras.
No.
Right.
But I think there was a guy that was doing this with like golf clubs and how many people sell golf clubs at garage sales and, you know, end up doing quite well.
Yeah.
Get, you know, you can get them quite cheaply and probably market them pretty well on, online.
Yeah. And I think part of this is, you know, do you live in an area that would be conducive to this?
Yeah.
It might be difficult in a city of our size. Some other cities, it might make more sense. Or, you know, if you live in Florida, it might say, you know, there's probably more people selling golf clubs in Florida than in, yep, in South Dakota.
Well, I mean, it's almost, if you're in a part of the country where something isn't that popular and, you know, not everybody's going to be buying golf clubs here, but if you can buy them here and yeah, sell them to people in Florida, there's, yep, there's opportunity there as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, good way to think of it. So how about productized consulting services in which you perform a specific task for a set fee? Give me some examples. So what are you talking about there?
Sure. So last fall-ish, I started a business called WP Mechanic. So in that business, I would or have somebody else go on your website and your WordPress website and make it fast. So I would go through all of like Google's page speed recommendations and, you know, make your website load faster for people, which, you know, increases your advertising revenue. It makes users more happy. It makes them stick around in your website. Mm-hmm. So it's finding a specific set of tasks that you can perform for a set group of people and then performing them over and over and over again.
Right.
And this is I think it's preferable to do, you know, kind of a productized consulting service to just, you know, being a freelancer that does whatever people tell them to, because it's a set process and you can systematize it.
Right.
You know exactly what you're going to have to do and exactly what they're going to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know the deliverable. And yeah, that's, I think, a big gap where a lot of people will start off as they say, well, I just want to help people. It's like, well, the problem with that is some people, it takes a lot more work to help them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you don't go into McDonald's and say, I'd like, you know, a Coney dog,
yeah,
with sauerkraut. Like, no, they have a system.
Yep.
You know, they have square fish. You know, you can't get a, you know, like, that's, you talk about systematized, they have square fish.
Yep. You know what I mean? You can't ask for a round fish, you have to get a square fish.
You can't get a regular size, a real size, you know, a normal size. So yeah, I like the wrinkle, and I hope people caught that, is that make sure that you have a productized consulting service. So you, this is beginning, and this is the end, and this is how much it costs.
Yep. And that way there's no surprises, and, you know, you can price it appropriately, and
and set, you know, a boundary.
Yeah,
set a boundary.
There's not a lot of back and forth about, you know, what are you going to do, what it's going to cost. It's
right.
You're going to pay me this, and you're going to get this.
Right. If you want anything else, then that's outside of it, and we can talk about it. But yep. Or you can just say, no, I don't do that.
Yep.
What about this? Offer research services specializing in areas like genealogy.
Absolutely. I mean, there are people that, you know, have more time than money, and they certainly would want to know who their ancestors are or want to learn about something, but they don't have the time to spend, you know, 10 or 15 hours on Google and ancestry.com and trying to find that information.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if I could pay somebody $100 to do that for me, that would certainly be a valuable thing.
So if you're listening and you've got more time than money, then, you know, then you can help people that have more money than time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the way it goes. And I know a woman that she's in Sioux Falls here. She actually, this is her job. She does family research and like puts together a book for you, writes your family story.
Interesting.
And you think about who wants that? Well, enough people want it that she's employed, you know? And so, yeah, that's a very specialized area, but maybe that's right up your, that business, man, it would drive me crazy.
Yeah, I couldn't do it.
I hate research, right? But if you love research and you love that kind of, you basically get paid to do your passion,
mm-hmm,
right? Provide remote technical support for users with computer problems. Let's get specific about that. Like, what do you think would it require? And then what are some ideas of sort of who you could reach out to? Like, who's your target market for? Because that's a pretty vague idea.
I mean, you know, the kind of the remote the remote desktop software has gotten so good these days that, you know, you can...
There's probably six or seven amazingly good options.
Yep. So you can just have them click on a link and then you can take over their computer and fix it. So it's really easy to make that connection to their computer these days. So anybody that, you know, obviously doesn't know a lot about computers or how to fix problems like viruses and other things that break on, you know, Windows computers, you know, there are certainly a lot of people that don't want to take their computer into Best Buy and spend $300 to get your computer diagnosed.
Well, that's why Best Buy made Geek Squad, because they realized people don't want to bring in their computers and unhook them and then sit them at, they want to come to you.
Yep.
And people much prefer that. But what if you could come to people wherever they are?
Yep.
And I think there's join.me, which is one I use, join.me, not join.com. TeamViewer is another one.
Yeah, that's what I use.
Is it?
Yep. Yeah,
people swear by that.
It's a nice piece of software.
Yeah, and you know, the cost is ridiculously small.
Yeah, I set that up on my parents' computer, or TeamViewer.
That is the most common story I hear is my parents.
So, I mean, they're always having issues, and every time I'm home, it's, hey, can you fix this while you're here? And it's like, well, now they can just send me an email and I'll take care of it, you know, before I show up. And that way, you know, when I'm there, I can just hang out and not worry about fixing their computer.
I get to talk to my parents now. Thank you, TeamViewer.
Yep. I'm pretty sure TeamViewer is free for most cases.
It is free for most cases. But for stability, if there is a paid option on a lot of those, I would encourage you to, like, I'm a paid join.me user because I just don't want to, I want to be able to get support and say, hey, I'm a paid user.
Yeah. But it should be pretty easy to compete with, you know, a place like Best Buy, because, you know, they have a big building and they've got all sorts of employees and, and what they have to charge, you know, to fix your computer ends up being as much as a new computer would cost.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you can say, you know, I'll remove a virus from your computer for $100 or $150.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be a lot better option for them.
It might take you an hour.
Yeah.
But the great thing about those, you know, how many people listen to this are making $150 an hour? I mean, do the math on that. Not a lot of people are. And that doesn't assume you're going to do it 8 hours a day. Maybe this is a hobby thing, or maybe you end up hiring five people that want to do this and you're going to keep 40% of what they make.
Yep.
But they're happy because they're working from home, right? So these are all systems you could set up. But I really like this for a couple reasons. And one of them is it could be transferred to businesses. You could support businesses remotely.
Yep.
And there are businesses that, you know, do support other businesses. But as a solopreneur, as a lean and mean operator, you could say, you know, I'm going to target all the hairdressers, all the, you know, the salons in town and say, here's what I offer when it comes to support. And make it very minimal. But if you get 20 of them signed up, what do you know? You got a business.
Absolutely.
That's, you know, from home.
Yep.
You know, it's exciting. What about audio editing skills? The idea that you could edit other people's podcasts or any audio work. There's enough people with podcasts, obviously. Where do you see that as a possibility?
Sure. I mean, you can really, the podcasting has really exploded in the last, you know, 24 months or so, especially, you know, since, you know, John Lee Dumas offered an entrepreneurship or a podcast course, and now there are, you know, new podcasts popping up just about every day about anything. And a lot of these people want to have a podcast, but they don't necessarily want to do all of the work to have a podcast. There are people that don't know how to use Audacity or audio editing stuff, and they don't know how to record or do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
I think you're paying for, or some guy's paying you, or what's paying you.
Yeah.
To help put a podcast together.
I used to do the audio editing, this specific piece, and now I pay someone else to do it.
Yep.
And it's not because I don't know how, it's just they can do it better and cheaper.
Yep.
Right? And so it's finding that one small piece and saying, I do this.
Yep.
And if you have a system for it, then, you know, for instance, I can give someone this piece of audio and say, hey, splice together a beginning, and we did a little thing in the middle, and, you know, tap something on the end, and, you know, even have them create a voiceover or something. And I just give them the little pieces, and they, it's not unlike paying someone to put together your new lawnmower, right? Like I bought it. Okay. And I've got the pieces, but can you put it together for me?
Yep. I mean, there's a lot of things like this, you know, beyond just audio editing that you can do. It's narration, you know, shooting video, it's photography,
I like the editing piece specifically because I do think there's a lot of people that are creating content that just don't want to edit it.
Yep.
You know? So it's like, I want to bake the bread, but not slice it, butter it, and make a sandwich or whatever, you know. Let's talk about finding contract work as a professional writer or blogger through things like the Pro Blogger job board. A lot of people have good, you know, they have good writing skills. I always get nervous when I start talking about writing skills because I'm going to say poor English. But they have some writing skills. Maybe they majored English, and or maybe they have a real passion for something. But you're saying there's job boards for people that want to be writers?
Absolutely. This is one of the things that I did when I was first starting out in 2006 and 2007.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was a company called Associated Content that was paying, you know, $10-$15 an article for just about anything I wanted to write. And, you know, I was getting a couple grand a month as a junior in college just pushing out content. And then, you know, later on, I kind of moved on to some individual jobs at the Pro Blogger job board.
Yeah.
And, you know, people were paying me $15 a blog post or $20. And, you know, I had no experience or no real knowledge or skills about anything. But
what were you writing about?
A lot of it was personal finance.
Yeah. So, that's great.
Yep. And, you know, I think the prices have gone up since I did it. And I think there's a lot of opportunity. And the nice thing about those job boards is a lot of the people that you are competing with are, you know, international, and English is their second language. So if you can put together an article reasonably well, I mean, you're above 80% of the competition.
Yeah. Well, and you think about this too, that there's an element of, there's a formula to that. I mean, there's headers and there's intro sentences. I mean, at some point you are really just sort of cranking them out.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, there's like, there's not this deep well of artistic energy you have to put into it.
No, and that's not always what they're looking for. Usually they want content for search engine optimization or whatever. I mean, they're not looking for you to write, you know, the next great novel. It's, they want a 500-word blog post about a topic that they can put on their website.
Yeah.
And they're okay.
Period. With, thank you very much. Here's your 15, here's your $20.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a larger one, but man, these people are hard to find. Is offer ghostwriting services to authors or publishers. I mean, it's hard to find ghostwriters.
Yeah.
Like, they literally are like ghosts. You know, so why is this? Obviously, I think it's a great idea, but why do you think it's a good idea?
I think it's a great idea because there are obviously people with messages that they want to get out. They want to write a book. They want to produce some kind of content, but they, you know, don't have the time or the energy, or they don't think they can write a book or do whatever kind of content.
Just can't write a book.
So
I mean, seriously, some people are like, I don't want to write a book, but here's the ideas, and I'm going to outline it and get to writing. You know, and I'll tell you, there's some real money in that.
Absolutely.
I mean, you can find someone that'll pay you $2,000, $4,000, $5,000 plus. And for those who don't know, a lot of bestsellers are written by ghostwriters, a lot of them, especially people that you go, when do they have time to write a book? Well, they don't. And so, you know, Hillary Clinton likely did not write her latest book.
No.
You know, Bob Dole did not write his. You know, I'm just thinking of lots of people that I
there
know.
There was a new book about the Shark Tank TV series that just came out. And, you know, it wasn't like Damon John and Mark Cuban that wrote the book. It was some guy that interviewed them that wrote the book. And I think there's really an opportunity in providing, you know, ghostwriting services, especially to people in like a specific category that you can communicate with. Mm-hmm. Like, not everybody can communicate with like Mark Cuban and understand what he's saying and what he wants to say. Mm-hmm. But if you have that mind for business, you might be able to communicate with somebody like him when someone else couldn't. Or if you are like a ghostwriter for, you know, as just any specific type of category of person, like a doctor that wants to write a book. And if you know that medical terminology, you can provide them ghostwriting services in a way that not everybody can.
Yeah. I had some people that I had to hire to do some audio work, but they had to be able to say medical terms. I was going to do it, and then I was reading it, and I was like, I don't know how to say these words, you know? So, you know, the two people I had do it are full-time nurses, but they knew the terms. And so they did their nursing shift, and they came home and made a few hundred dollars reading, you know? It was great. Provide marketing services to professionals in areas like chiropractic or dentistry.
Sure.
Why do you mention those?
I think I've seen a few people do this very well. You know, typically people that are have, you know, kind of professionalized services that are, you know, more elective than necessary. You know, well, dentistry is obviously necessary, but people, you know, if you don't do it for a year or two, nothing terrible is going to happen. I mean, with stuff like that, you can kind of avoid the headaches of the medical industry. And you can also provide them a lot of value because a dentist is obviously not going, his primary focus or her primary focus isn't going to be marketing. It's going to be doing dentistry work. And if you can come in and say, I've done this, this, and this for another dentist in another city, I can do that for you too and get you more customers.
Yeah.
And if they, you know, want more customers, which hopefully they do, you know, you can provide them value. There are a couple of people that do this particularly well. One guy's name is Trent Deersmid. He has a thing called marketing for dentists, and that's, you know, all he does, or that's one of his main things, is he has like a specialized marketing plan that he goes into dentist office and helps them with.
That's great. That's great. Life coaching services using tools like Skype and, and Google Hangouts. Where do you see the need for that?
I think this is a big opportunity. You know, I know a lot of counselors that graduated from the same seminary that I did, and you know, they all want to go work in an office somewhere and be a counselor. But I don't think a lot of people are recognizing the opportunity yet that, you know, you don't really need to be in the same room as somebody to offer them counseling or life coaching services. It's, you know, you can be looking at them through a video chat and Google Hangouts or Skype and have the same value.
I think about this from a cost perspective. How much does it cost you to have that office and to have that secretary and keep the lights on and drive there? Right, and furnish it and water the plants and, you know, go to lunch because you got to eat lunch when you're out, you know, at work. And, you know, let's just say you get $80 an hour as a counselor. You know, but how much of that is overhead? If you could find a way to make $50 an hour, number one, obviously you're going to be cheaper. Right? But your costs are going to be so much lower. And so it's like, well, how do you make that look good? Well, you've got a lot of money left over now that you're not spending on rent. You know, I guarantee you for the money you would spend on rent for 1 month, you'd get a pretty nice, you know, webcam.
I mean, if you're spending $1,500 a month in rent and your hourly rate is $80 an hour, that means you're working 20 hours of your month just to pay your rent bill.
And
I think the real opportunity with this, though, is, you know, you're, instead of your potential audience being the people that live in the same zip code as you, it's people anywhere in the country or really anywhere in the world that can buy your services now.
Right. And so that's true. That's true of any kind of coaching at this point, right? Because we talked about being able to access computers and then also just being able to talk with people. Is if you can coach people on something, you can coach little league coaches, then you can reach out to them no matter where, no matter where you are, you know. Providing proofreading services to authors and bloggers. Obviously, this is for people that have a certain skill set. You know.
And there's... like there are people like me that like to write, and then when we write, we just kind of want to be done with it and have it go out or have somebody else worry about it. So if you have literary or even any kind of reading degree or any kind of reading talent or literature talent, you know, people like my wife can, you know, they get really excited about finding spelling errors and you know, making stuff sound better than it has.
Absolutely. We're laughing because we're just not those people.
No,
we're
like,
it's amazing.
I think people can get through a comment in the wrong place, but you know, obviously you want your stuff to look good, and if you can pay somebody a little bit of money to have to worry about that for you, that's will definitely be a valuable thing if you can provide that service to people.
We got a couple more. One is to create digital scrapbooks or photo albums for busy moms. Did you know my wife did this?
Really?
Yeah. She didn't do it digitally. She had, but she had local clients that would literally just bring her a box of photos and say, make it look good. And she would, this is when we didn't have three kids and she had a little more time. But yeah, she would make beautiful scrapbooks for people and bring them back. And they're like, hallelujah. I mean, I think they'd pay her like $8 a page.
Sure.
And it might take her 10 minutes to do a page. And, you know, supplies would be included in that. But what's funny is so many people would bring their supplies. Because they're like, I bought all this stuff and I'm not going to use it. So my wife ended up having really no money into the job at all.
That's funny.
Because they bought it and it's never got around to it. I mean, most of her clients are that way. So if you think about, you know, 10 minutes for a page and you've got $8 a page, that's six pages an hour.
$48.
And, you know, you got to pay a little bit for tax. But, you know, I mean, it's, you know, she's a stay-at-home mom doing that. You know, she just ran out of time.
You can think about how many people, you know, 10 years ago had just boxes of photos everywhere, and now everybody has digital camera rolls that are not labeled, not edited, and just in a big folder somewhere. And, you know, people want to have nice photo books, but they just,
yeah. So
it's not a priority, so they don't do it.
Right. So this is a great thing is you don't have to be an expert in layout and design and things like that. There are services out there. I'm trying to remember the one photo one, but anyway, there's a lot of them out there, but they create these photo books. Mm-hmm. I mean, Apple even creates photo books.
Yep.
Right. Beautiful ones. Yep. So you're just saying, hey, bring me, you know, and I'll bring a hard drive to your house. We'll hook it up. I take your photos and away we go. You know, get some biographical information. My wife would have a survey. You know, who are these people? How are they related?
Yep.
Show me a picture of each one so I know who they are. So sure. I put the right cousins on the right page and such. The last one, and I really like this one, especially if someone out there listening is really good at a specific program, and it could be really Microsoft Word to something much more specialized, but providing online training for a piece of specialized software. I think specialized there is the key, don't you?
I do. I think you know, the training for Microsoft Word exists, but, you know, the training for Scrivener is a lot harder to come by.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of...
There's so many people that just went, what is Scrivener?
Yes.
And that's the point, is a lot of people don't know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there's a huge opportunity there. And we know a guy is the Scrivener coach.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, why can't you be the, you know, insert your program here coach? You can, right?
Yep. Because there are certainly people that want to learn how to use tools like Photoshop and Illustrator and... you know, even like some programming stuff or just any kind of specialized piece of software that people want to use that, you know, don't know how to use it. And that, you know, they're at a point in their life where they don't want to just click around until they figure out how they can do what they want to do. They just want to have a link where, you know, somebody will show them exactly how to do what they want to do and will want somebody to show them, you know, what are the hidden tricks and tips and, you know, how can this piece of software make your life easier beyond just kind of what the basic functionality is.
Yeah, and where I see a really big gap, frankly, is with specialized software, but also with people, let's say they run their whole office on Mac, use Apple. It's like, how can you use the Apple suite and iCloud, and how can you use the tools you already have to really optimize your workflow? And I think, you know, I've worked with several companies, and my pitch to them was, I'm going to save you time.
Mm-hmm.
Which is going to save you money. Yep. I'm going to decrease your turnover. You're going to have happier employees. Happier employees are more productive. More productive means more money.
Yep.
It really comes down to, here's how I'm going to help you make more money.
Absolutely.
But that byproduct of that, or the way you get to that, is you have happier employees, where it doesn't take them as long to do things.
Yep.
Communication's better, you know, better systems.
Yep.
And so you can take someone that says, well, that's just kind of a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
But would you like to be paid for your hobby? Because, you know, the only difference between a hobby and a business is one costs money and one makes you money.
Yep.
Right. So we can stop buying all your Mac stuff and actually help people and make some money doing it. Right.
Sure. And I think if you can help people develop, you know, systems and processes with the software that already exists and just help them do things what they're already doing faster, that certainly will save them time and money. And hopefully they'll want to give you some of that money, you know, in exchange for
their time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And let me give a word of encouragement to those who think this is impossible. Right now, the most popular level for the Scrivener Coach, which is a writing program for those who aren't familiar with it, the most popular level that he sells, I believe, is $167, maybe $147. And Scrivener costs, the program, is $45.
Mm-hmm.
So he's charging over three times as much, almost four times as much, to learn how to do a program as the actual program. But you know what? It's worth it.
It is.
It's worth it. So I want to say that as an encouragement. So, you know, as Matt mentions, not all of these are necessarily original, but they will be original and unique if you apply them.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of these ideas fit you listening, but we really believe that if you have a desire for an online business after you've read the book, that these will, one of these will ring true and maybe several of them. I want to give you the last word, Matt. If someone says, well, I really like four of these ideas, I'm going to go do four of them, right? What would be your encouragement to someone that's really jacked up?
Mm-hmm.
They took notes and they're like, this is what I'm going to go do.
Sure.
Because you've built several, you have several, right? Some have come and gone.
Mm-hmm.
They're all at different levels of maturity, if you will. So someone just heard this, they don't have an internet business, but they're like, now I'm ready to go get it.
Yep.
They're excited about three or four of these. Yep. What do you want to tell them? I'll give you the last word.
Sure. Obviously, you should pick the best one. If you try to do four different things at once, you're not going to do particularly well with any of them. You should find the one thing that you're most excited about and give that all of your focus. You can certainly do three or four things, but you shouldn't do them all at once. You should find the one business that you think has the best opportunity to succeed and find the one that you're most excited about and the best combination of those two things. You should pursue that until you get your product developed or your service developed and launched and you have a whole bunch of customers, and you shouldn't even consider doing the next one until you're kind of at a point where you think, I've kind of done about what I can do with this, and now I've got more free time that my first business is kind of down to a system and not requiring as much of my time anymore. That's the time to think about business number two. There's plenty of time to do multiple businesses in your life. You know, if you're starting at age 25, you've got 40, 45 years to get stuff done. Don't worry that there's not enough time to pursue all of your ideas. There will be plenty of time to do that. So just find the one idea and pursue it as best you can.